is Monday. The time is 5:30 on the nose, noobs. 5:30 on the nose.
On the nose.
Right on time. You're listening to Say Hey, KZFR's and Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio program. Joined as always by Noobs. And Noobs, you had a good weekend?
I had a good weekend.
Excellent.
Had a good day today. I'm enjoying this weather.
Yeah, this is nice weather.
Before it heats up later on this week.
It's not too hot today.
No. It's supposed to get up to like 87 later in the week, though.
I don't care for that.
Not in March.
I'm not into it.
Not in March.
No. But it was a good week for sports, of course. Lots of happenings.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get right into it. It's March Madness. And as I mentioned last week, I got to take part in March Madness up in Portland.
Excellent.
And I saw four games at the Rose Garden on Thursday morning / afternoon / evening.
Some good ones, too.
Some good ones, too. And I was in there with my brother. We had tickets to both sessions. The way it works is a session is two games. So two games, they clear the arena, they clean everything up, and then the next ticketed session starts two more games. And so we were there for like 12 and a half hours. We got in there a little after 10. We left, you know, the last game was a long one. There were a lot of free throws, the Georgetown game. But, man, it was great. The game of the day for us was the VCU-Ohio State game, which went to overtime.
Wow.
That was a good one. VCU had a shot to win it in regulation, didn't get it done. I got to give some kind of rankings, if you will, of what I saw for the day. The best visiting fans tie between Eastern Washington, who obviously they were close and they had a lot of people there and they were way into it, only it was kind of a topsy-turvy game for them because they got way down and then had to climb back up, so they were kind of hit and miss on when they could really be into it.
Right.
But the Stephen F. Austin fans, who were not nearly as close, obviously, they showed up big time, wearing their purple. They were really into it. I was super impressed by Stephen F. Austin fans.
Nice.
Best band of the day, because we got to sit. We were in the second row, noobs. We were sitting right behind the bands and the cheer squads, so the opposite ends of the hoop, you know. So our bands that we saw up close were like the Ohio State band, the Stephen F. Austin band, the Georgetown band, Arizona, and Texas Southern, real small school, who got just destroyed by Arizona. They had a great, great band, probably band of the day.
Really?
The Ohio State was probably the most professional.
That's kind of what I would have guessed.
Yep, and the guys in that band, the guys and gals, including the conductor, were huge, rabid Ohio State fans. So watching them participate in the game itself was just as much fun as watching them play music.
Did you don your Michigan gear?
You know what? I didn't wear my Michigan gear just because I don't know why. No reason other than
just
I
just felt like you didn't want to stir the pot.
I went in there with a clean head of hair and didn't wear a hat. But I did wear my Chris Mullin jersey just because.
There you go.
I got some Seton Hall comments.
There you go.
As you might expect.
Yeah, well, Seton Hall and St. John's.
St. John's. Pardon me. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they were in the old Big East with Georgetown.
Yep.
So you might have had some old Hoya heads
making
a comment.
And the best mascot of the day, hands down, was the Georgetown Hoya.
Which you got a picture with.
My brother and I got a picture with
at
the end. We waited till everybody was cleared out. And I was like, Hoya, please, one more photo, like the paparazzi or something. He was so good, though, man. He was a smooth operator.
Nice.
So it was just a blast. What a great day. Anybody has a chance to do that on an opening Thursday or Friday of March Madness, I highly recommend it. So let's start with you, noobs. Biggest surprises from opening weekend?
Oh, man. I don't even know if really there's surprises to me anymore. Seeing some of the top seeds go down, especially Kansas, you know, going down. I feel like that, like, a lot of people might look at those seeds and see a 2-7 and say, oh, man, that's a big upset.
No, but that was one that we had discussed as a pretty decent chance,
right.
Yeah.
And I've gone back and looked at Kansas since Bill Self took over for Roy Williams after the 2003 season. And, you know, they've gone out in the round of 64 and the round of 32, 5 out of 12 years.
Right.
And that's as a 1 or 2 seed.
Right.
So they kind of have a little bit of a history. I mean, they'll also get to a final and win one.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
every few years, too. So, I mean, you know, you're talking about one of the darlings of college basketball as far as the history goes with, you know, Kentucky's, North Carolina's, and UCLA's of the world. But they go down in the second round. I think really when I look at this, the most surprising things in retrospect were some of the seedings.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, to see Michigan State as a 7,
right,
Wichita State as a 7, Baylor as high as a 3, they go down.
Right.
Villanova, you know, looking at that, just, you know, on paper, you'd say, oh, well, like they should have maybe rolled over NC State. But you got to look at the ACC as a total conference.
Yeah.
And they put in six teams in the tournament, less than the Big 12 and the Big 10.
Yep.
And they have five out of those six teams still
Virginia,
alive.
The only one going down.
Virginia, you know.
Virginia, good defense, but not a great scoring team.
Not a great scoring team, and they hadn't played well down the stretch. I think they had lost three out of their last five games.
Right.
So ACC representing big, the Big 12 and Big 10, the Big 12 and Big 10, who each got seven teams in there. They only have two each remaining.
Pac-12 representing.
Pac-12, we got three out of four of their entrants still alive. Mm-hmm. Oregon going down, and they fought really tough against Wisconsin, a number one seed yesterday.
Right.
So Pac-12's got to be feeling good about themselves right now.
Absolutely. UCLA, one of those bubble teams we were kind of ripping on a little bit, who have put up a good showing.
And they got the benefit of a call against SMU.
They did. That was a bad call.
That was questionable as to whether or not that was goaltending.
Right.
I don't know if it was going to hit the cylinder, but it's a bang-bang call that the refs got to make.
Yep.
The thing about it is they got to look at that rule now and see if that's something that's reviewable.
Yeah.
Because I believe that it wasn't.
It should be. Why not?
You know?
If you can review out of bounds.
Oh, you know what? Honestly, I don't want to get too off topic here, but the biggest surprise of the weekend to me was Larry Brown saying that Kentucky would be a playoff team in the Eastern Conference.
Oh.
I mean, I respect Larry Brown. Uh-huh. I mean, the guy is one of the greatest basketball minds of the last, you know, 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
He's the only man to have won an NCAA championship and an NBA championship.
Right.
Okay, but Larry, I'm sorry.
No.
You must not have taken your medication that day.
No.
Okay, because there is no way on God's green earth, okay, that Kentucky would make the playoffs.
No.
Eastern Conference, even in the D League.
No.
I mean, they would get trounced.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe they'd win a best out of five with like Philadelphia. Maybe.
Right.
But I don't think so.
Yeah.
You're talking about every guy on that team is an NBA quality player.
Yeah.
Well, Kentucky's got like three or four NBA guys.
You know, and every so often when a college team in either football or basketball is really kind of turning on the burners, somebody will throw that out there about how this team could beat so-and-so in the next, you know.
Like people saying last year that Florida State could have beaten Tampa Bay.
Right.
Or something like something ridiculous.
You know what? It's like, I don't think so.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's one thing when you hear like a small coach, like earlier in the year, some, you know, lower level Division One team got slaughtered by Kentucky, you know, and that coach came out and said, oh, they could do this and they could do that, you know, and John Calipari threw water on it real quick.
Right.
So you hear that from coaches who get blown out by 40, 50 points because they're in awe and it's understandable.
Right.
And they're not as much of an authority on these things because they haven't been coaching in the game for 50 years like someone like Larry Brown.
Yeah.
When Larry Brown comes out and says it, it really is kind of, it's like you're not just going to all of a sudden believe it because it's not true.
Right.
You know what I mean? But he's such an authoritative, you know, person on this subject that I was really, really surprised to hear him say something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you stick a microphone in somebody's face enough times, they're bound to say something
dumb.
Ridiculous.
So are you saying that in the last 2 years I've said something dumb, Jake?
Well, I know I have. I had Gonzaga going out and getting crushed in the second round. That was my one upset pick, and they're doing the crushing.
They are doing the crushing.
Yeah, so joke's on me on Gonzaga this time, and we'll see what happens in the Sweet 16. They're going to play
They got UCLA.
Yeah, so that'll be kind of cool, a little West Coast matchup.
Absolutely.
Other matchups I'm looking forward to when I'm looking at my bracket right now. I mean, I love rooting for NC State just because I like the whole Jimmy V story forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that's a long time ago, but I like rooting for NC State if for no other reason than that.
No, that program is definitely identifiable with the whole Jim Valvano story.
Yep.
And there's no reason for it to not be like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even if they, you know, turn around the next couple of years and they come in as like a perennial one seed.
Right.
They're still always going to have that Cinderella underdog flavor to them, even though they're a big program.
Totally.
And that's fine because, you know, they share a conference with Duke and North Carolina.
Yep.
And it just ain't easy.
No.
And now they got a matchup with a fellow conference rival in the ACC, Louisville.
Yep. That'll be a good one.
So that'll be good.
Notre Dame, Wichita State could be fun.
That will be a good game.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a good one.
That bracket in general I'm liking because West Virginia is going to play Kentucky.
Right.
And Bob Huggins, the coach of the Mountaineers, is 8-2 all time against Cal.
Right.
And he actually knocked Kentucky out of the tournament a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Then we got Wisconsin, UNC. That could be a good one. I don't know a whole lot about Xavier. I didn't get a chance to watch much of them. They were actually playing during one of my games on Thursday and so forth. But Arizona has looked really good.
Yeah, that was my pick to win it all.
I saw them in person, and they're the real deal.
They are.
And they have played like it thus far in the tournament.
Kind of an interesting storyline because they're playing Xavier, and Sean Miller, the coach of Arizona, that's where he was coaching at before this.
Right.
So
right. Duke, Utah. I mean, Duke looked good over San Diego State, but that's not a real good scoring team. Utah's maybe even overachieving a little bit in the sense that people don't pay a lot of attention to Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that Georgetown-Utah game was, you know, decent enough. Georgetown looked pretty good against Eastern Washington, but I don't know what to make. What do you think, Duke or Utah?
Well, I would say Duke probably if I had a, you know, the proverbial gun to my head, but I have been following the Utes a little bit this year because I've been trying to keep my eye on the Pac-12, and honestly, the way the Pac-12 is looking right now, the way that they've represented themselves, I'd have to say Utah's kind of bumped up a little bit in my mind.
Yeah,
you know, they did have a really good regular season in the Pac-12. They went out in the conference semifinals in the tournament,
right?
But they hung really close with Arizona at home,
yeah,
real late in the season, and to me that's a very good barometer, because Arizona to me is, you know, up there with Wisconsin and Kentucky is the class of the nation,
right? And they were actually one of my games as well, seeing them against Stephen F. Austin, and they weren't flashy, but definitely
they get it
team.
Done.
Yeah, they got it done. Yep. And then, you know, let's see, other noteworthy games I'm looking at here on the schedule from the course of the week. You know, there wasn't, I mean, the couple of 14s advanced from the
first round.
That's always fun.
Yeah.
We're not going to have that crazy, crazy Cinderella unless somebody goes to the finals or something.
Right.
You know, all of the double-digit seeds, except for UCLA. Yeah, I think they're the only double-digit seed left in the tournament, as I'm looking here at the bracket.
That would be UCLA.
Yep.
And you know,
and
they're an 11.
They're such
a
name
that you don't look at them.
You don't think of them as a Georgia State.
No.
Yeah, so we probably won't have that kind of year. But you know, I always want to root for an underdog. I mean, I think it'd be great to see Wichita State move on. I know they were good last year too, but you know, when you look at a team like Wichita State, who, because they don't recruit in the same way as the Kentuckys of the world. They have continuity, and I was looking. I was like, "Oh, there's Fred Van Fleet. You know, like he's been on the team for years now."
Yeah, that's what's gone.
And I recognize him.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that.
Yeah, that's what's gone from college basketball. I just watched I hate Christian Laettner.
Yeah.
30 for 30 on ESPN, which is really great.
That was good.
Man, that stirred up some memories.
Yeah.
And I just remember back in the day, you know, guys would stick with a team. Even, you know, NBA guys that knew they were going to go to the NBA, they'd stay 3-4 years.
Yep.
And you could build up an identity on a team and a group of guys that you either really rooted for or really, you know, rooted against.
Yeah.
And I remember really rooting against Laettner and Hurley and Cherokee Parks and the Hills and Coach K and all that. They just kind of were the embodiment of everything that I didn't like.
Right.
You know, and so I was a big UConn guy, but I kind of latched onto the Fab Five too, the baggy shorts. And all that. And
yep.
So it was a good time. So yeah, that's what's cool about teams like Butler, you know, from a couple of years ago, they went to the finals twice, you know, but it was because they brought guys back for 3 or 4 years at a time.
Yep.
You know, Gordon Hayward, who wound up going to the NBA, you know, he was a senior when he went out. And so, you know, I think it's going to be interesting with Wichita State because they might be able to turn the tables on Kentucky if they get past Notre Dame, because last year they came in, I believe, at a number one seed,
right,
which was really high for a mid-major school. But they had Kentucky as an 8 seed, so they met in the second round. Kentucky obviously went on in advance because they went to the final last year. But so Wichita State maybe as a 7 can maybe turn the tables on Kentucky in the regional final if they do wind up meeting.
Right. And for the record, I want to say that I still love Laettner. Granted, he was when he was a senior, I was only 10 years old.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't have the mental ability to really foster a real strong opinion of Christian Laettner as a little kid. But the thing that got me into enjoying college basketball in the first place when I was younger was Duke UNC games on ESPN and ESPN2 and Dick Vitale. And I don't love or hate either of those teams. Like, I don't like have a particular rooting interest, but I love that whole thing, that whole North Carolina thing.
Yeah.
And so I grew up like loving watching Duke.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never really hated a Duke player. Like, I'm just not one of those guys that'll ever, you know, hate Duke for any reason. And in almost because Laettner is so polarizing, I lean towards loving him just to give the man some love.
See, and he, and not that he needs it because he seems to be doing all right.
Oh, I'm sure he's doing fine. Yeah.
Now he's doing the AT&T commercials with Shaq, which is kind of funny because you don't really associate those guys with great college careers like you do Leitner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other three were, you know, had phenomenal pro careers, Drexler, Dr. J, and Shaq. But real quick, just back to that thing is, I, you know, the way that Duke played, you know, strong fundamentals and just, you know, good team play. I mean, Coach K is, you know, without a doubt, perhaps the great, well, he's one of the greatest college basketball coaches of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So the only reason I really disliked them is because they put UConn out 2 years in a row.
Oh, that's, yeah. And then, that, you know, that it was only, perfect sense.
Yeah. And I didn't hate them because of some kind of like, you know, abstract, like, oh, these are pretty boys. They're stuck up rich kids. That wasn't why I didn't like them. Yeah. I didn't like them because they put my teams out.
Right.
And they were so good. They were like the Yankees.
That's a good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good reason. The whole thing about privilege and like kind of associations that people make with student athletes at Duke, you know, those, a lot of times those aren't true.
No.
You know,
and Chris Webber was recruited by Duke.
Yeah.
You know, so this whole image of like the bad, you know, the bad boy Detroit kids. I mean, Webber almost went to Duke.
Right.
Webber went to a private school.
Right.
Like, he might not have been a rich kid, but it's not like he like had to spend all his hours in the ghetto.
No. And Leitner was, you know, came from a blue collar family.
Exactly.
And they kind of addressed all of that in the documentary, which is actually quite good.
And Hurley's a Jersey kid. Like, you know, it's just, I don't know. Like, I love that documentary. And, like, it's not like I've been holding on to hatred for Leitner, but I definitely, like, I like to see this side of him. I thought it was really well done.
No, I thought it was good, too. It was right up there with the Fab Five one.
Yeah.
I'd say the Fab Five one was probably a little bit better just because, I don't know.
There's more social implications.
And also, like, specific, you know, very, like, specific culmination with Webber, you know, calling the timeout.
Yes.
It had this finite end.
Yep.
But the Leitner one was one of my favorites for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And aspects of it were, like, I was really engaged. Like, I definitely enjoyed that. So if you like college basketball, check that 30 for 30 out. I hate Christian Leitner. You know what, noobs? Let's turn the tables for just a minute. Unless you want to make a bold pick of our Sweet 16s and you want to stick with Arizona?
No, I'm sticking with the Wildcats.
Okay, I like it. I like it. I'm going to root for the Wildcats. I want to see the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Of course, I want to see a Cinderella, but realistically, I think the Wildcats have a shot to defeat somebody like Kentucky. I don't know. If they cross hairs, I mean, looking at that bracket, that might be the best shot because Kentucky does look good.
Yeah, Kentucky,
even though we say they could get bumped off, they do look good.
I mean, they look really good. I think West Virginia's got some athletes. They've got some length. I think they're going to hang with them for about 30 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and then Kentucky's going to pull away. I think the regional final, whether it's Notre Dame or Wichita State, could be really, really interesting. But I'm looking forward to that Final Four matchup, which I'm predicting will be against Arizona. I think Arizona's going to knock off either Wisconsin or UNC after they take care of Xavier. And that Arizona-Kentucky game, man, that's going to be,
that'd be a good one.
That's going to be fantastic.
Arizona's a pretty big team.
They're big. They can hang with them.
They can hang with them size-wise.
And, you know, it's only 40 minutes. It's not a best to seven.
Right. Exactly. Looking at the NBA real quick, the Warriors put in a good one against the Hawks, beating them down in Oakland without Klay. That was a nice statement win, if you will, after dropping a tough one in Atlanta about 2 months ago. So that was a nice win. Warriors are doing well right now. Definitely, you know, Klay's out for another week, give or take, just with a sprained ankle. But maybe if he comes back with a healthy ankle and he gives, you know, he's got that extra time to rest his legs, maybe that's even a blessing in disguise this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just getting to take a break, so long as the ankle proves not to be problematic. And then, you know, we've got about 10 minutes, and I know we can fill this up here. Right after the show ended last week here on Say Hey, Chris Borland, 49ers linebacker, announced his retirement from the NFL after his rookie season. We're talking about a guy that was basically a rookie all-pro, all-rookie NFL, looking to step in and take over for Patrick Willis, who retired. And he hangs it up at 24 because of the possible threat of concussions, not concussions he's already experienced and had symptoms. He looked down the line and said, "This is not what I want to potentially put myself into. I'm hanging it up." He gave back like $500,000 of his signing bonus.
Yeah, three quarters of it.
Yeah, to not have to go through any sort of like give and take with the Niners, any legal anything. And it's kind of a big deal. And even though it's a week later, they're still writing new articles on it. And Roger Goodell and the NFL brass had to come out with a response today. And it was real polished, like, you know, kind of lawyer speak and stuff. What are your initial takes from that whole thing?
I mean, that's kind of it's kind of a shot heard around the NFL, if you will. I think it's going to raise a lot of eyebrows, but it's also going to get a lot of people's attention, because if these are the fears that young men are having coming into league or playing in the year in the league after only a, you know, a season or two, then this is something that needs to be looked at. I mean, obviously something that needs to be looked at, because we've got guys that are committing suicide and shooting themselves in the chest so that their brain can be intact to be studied. I mean, you know, this CTE, this is a real deal. This is affecting, you know, hundreds of former NFL players. And, you know, guys are looking at some of the older guys, you know. And, you know, they're seeing them, you know, hobble up onto the stage during these Hall of Fame ceremonies and, you know, things of that nature. And I just feel like, you know, what is this going to do for the game? Is it going to get it to the point where we're going to limit contact so much that the game is going to, you know, barely resemble tackle football?
Right.
What's the future of the NFL? What does this mean 10, 20, 30, 40 years down the line?
Yeah.
You know, and because this isn't like some no-name. It's like you just pointed out.
No, he had a great rookie year.
He was an all-rookie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, not only does it hurt the 49ers short-term, but we're thinking, like, what does this do to, you know, 8, 9, 10-year-old kids who are thinking about picking up peewee football and they decide to play soccer or whatever instead?
I think that's the real effect of something like this. The ripple effect is that parents take notice of it.
Absolutely.
And when it starts to seem like it's not outrageous as a parent or an authority figure in a young person's life to say, no, you can't play football. That's not good for you. You can start citing examples of current athletes recognizing it, because when nobody's, you know, breaking the trend, it's probably hard to be a parent at some time at some point and say, no, you can't play football.
Right.
Well, why? Everybody else does it.
Yeah.
But if guys like this continue to step away more, then from the parent's perspective, it becomes easier to make a case to your kid that no, you shouldn't do that.
Right.
Here's why. Here's lots of people that don't.
Yeah.
Just as they probably would if their kid wanted to be a boxer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then in the sense that I've made the point before, these athletes that go into the professional world of football, they do, you know, currently, not in the past, but currently the data is out there. We know how dangerous it is. So do we accept the fact that if you're going to play football as a profession, that this is just the way it is, just like you do boxing? Nobody's saying let's put headgear on boxers,
no.
Or even if that would help ultimately. You know, they use it in amateur fighting. But
yeah,
that's
in the Olympics. Yeah.
Nobody's suggesting that. So do we do the same thing with boxing where we say this is what it is, you know what the risks are, take it, or do we completely change the sport to a point where it's not really contact anymore? Like, where do you go?
Well,
it's not going to be an overnight decision, but where does it go?
No, well, I think, unfortunately, in anything, you have to follow the money. And I think the NFL is going to do what's best for their bottom line. And if there's such a public outcry to reduce injuries in the game, then I think that that's what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Obviously, I don't really think, and it's sad to say, I don't really think they care about the pressure from the lawsuits of former players. I don't think that they really care. Like,
well, they're making money hand over fist.
Exactly. They only take care of it because they're trying to squash any kind of public relations snafu that they can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they've got them popping up all over the place like whack-a-mole, whether it's domestic violence or, you know, concussions taking tolls 10 years down the line, whatever it is. You know, they've got a lot of issues right now, so they need to be careful. But at the same time, you're asking someone like, well, do we now just should people just accept, you know, and almost like sign a waiver, so to speak? Well, I mean, I've always kind of thought that that's how it was. You know what I mean? That you understood that football was a violent contact sport,
right?
And that you take that risk, and you that's why you're getting paid millions of dollars to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that, like, you know, hockey players are like, they're not, you know, they understand the risk.
Yeah,
you know, they're
I'd
not naive
so.
to this kind of thing, and obviously they don't take quite the same kind of hits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that a football player will take over the course of his career. I mean, you see some of these hockey players that are skating around in their 40s. It's pretty amazing. But that is a very violent sport.
Oh, it is. And there's evidence of CTE in retired hockey players as well.
Absolutely.
It's just that football predominantly, percentage-wise, you know, takes the cake of the major team sports in America.
Well, it's got, yeah, it's got the spotlight on it for sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's next? I mean, is there going to be some kind of revolutionary leap in the technology as far as helmets go?
Right.
Protective gear. Is there something radical we need to do there? Do we even need to, like, maybe take a giant step backwards and put leather helmets back on to really make, because I think guys have this false sense of security when they're flying through the air with this helmet on.
I'd be curious to know what kind of stats like exist in rugby and things like that.
As far as
concussions,
traumatic head injuries.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, I know it happens in wrestling a lot.
Right.
Because they're literally having their skulls slammed into the mat.
Like Greco-Roman wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I'm kind of with you where I feel like if football needs to take a major hit at youth leagues because parents don't think it's safe with all of the evidence that's clearly in front of us, I have no problem with that. If it means that less people play football, that's fine. That's the way, if it goes the way of the dodo a bit over the next 20 years, I don't have a problem with that. I probably wouldn't want my kid to play football, you know? I mean, and if that means that the game is still the game and the people that want to take the risk just like boxers do.
Right.
Then that's the way it is.
Well, it might become kind of a niche thing. Like, I mean, boxing, horse racing, and baseball were the top three sports in this country like 70 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now boxing and horse racing is a very much, it's a niche thing. I mean, granted,
comparatively,
you're going to have crossover appeal with Pacquiao Mayweather coming up here in about 6 weeks.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, it's still a moneymaker.
It's a moneymaker, but I mean, you don't have like the entire country wrapped around, you know.
It's not broadcast on, you know, network television, for example.
If you ask people, you know, 40 years ago, you know, who the heavyweight champion of the world, I bet you most people could probably tell you. Now, maybe one out of 10 people could tell you, if that.
And it's been the same person for 10 years.
Right.
So that tells you how popular it is.
You know, yeah. But the one thing I would say to the youth out there, we don't really know. You know, I would never in a million years ever tell a parent what to do, what kind of decision they would make with, you know, in regards to the safety of their child. But, you know, I wonder, because we don't really have stats on, like, what the concussion rate is at the youth level, the high school level,
mm-hmm.
college level. Like, unfortunately, we're going to have,
it's
like...
It's still unfolding.
It's unfolding. And unfortunately, in the next 10, 20 years, when we find these out, like, how many people are going to wind up getting seriously hurt in the meantime.
But there's definitely legitimate evidence that over time, if you play a sport like that long enough, your percentages of having, you know, brain injuries go way up.
See,
and not every football player does.
No.
We should make that clear. But
the thing is, though, most kids, though, are going to be done with their football careers after high school.
Right.
I mean, the great percentage, like 98% of those kids are not going to go play college. And then out of the entirety of all college football players, only 1% of them are going to go to the NFL. So you're talking about such an elite level and such a small, small amount of people who have ever picked up a helmet are actually going to make it to that level. And so who has, you know, a 20-year football career?
Right.
Not that many people.
Right.
So I feel that if you do make it in the NFL, you know, it's kind of one of those, you know, do it at your own risk.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I tend to agree.
You know,
unless you just want to completely radically change the sport.
No, and I'm not trying to be insensitive.
I'm not either.
You know, but at the same time, it's like, if you don't want that to be a possibility, then don't be like Chris Borland. Find something else to do.
There's lots of sports where you don't have to bash your head in.
And I applaud him because he left a lot of money on the table.
Yeah.
A lot of money.
A lot of money.
Not only the money that he gave back to the 49ers, but all his future earnings.
Yeah.
I mean, let's say he had, you know, an 8-year career.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he could have been a multi-millionaire.
The odds are he'll never make anywhere near as much money in whatever he does professionally as he could have in a handful of years playing football.
Absolutely.
He'll never make near as much money.
But, you know, obviously he's thinking to himself, you know, I might have been a millionaire, but if I can't enjoy it because I can't recognize my family.
Right.
Or, you know, so...
No, I mean, I think it's an admirable decision.
Right.
And ultimately, things like this will have an effect. It'll take a while, but, you know, the ripple effect will go down.
So, you know, who knows? Maybe there's hope for soccer. Yeah, everybody's complaining about, you know, why is soccer not take off in this country?
There could be, man.
Maybe that'll...
You could have more prime athletes playing before long. You never know.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll see. Well, noobs, that was a half hour gone by real quickly.
As always.
Here on Say Hey KZFR, stick around. Grant's got some news-related programming coming right up for you. Noobs, we'll be back next week talking more March Madness for certain.
Buckle your chin straps, kids.
Buckle your chin straps. All right, guys, we'll see you next week.
This is Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution.